Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you for Jerusalem. This is Unit 10 of 20, in which we're learning through the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and it's the last Mishnah in the second parak that we're going to finish today and at the end of this second week. So last time we saw Mishnah Chet, in which we were left in a little bit of attention. Witnesses had come, they had made a ridiculous claim that Rabbi Dosa Ben Horkonos had called them out on. It just scientifically can't be, in the reality of the world, it can't be. And yet Rabbi Gamliel had accepted their testimony. And not only did Rabbi Dosa Ben Horkonos get upset with this, but we were first introduced to Rabbi Yehoshua, who said that he saw, instead of the Edim seeing the moon, he saw the words of Rabbi Dosa. And Rabbi Yehoshua is the number two in command, right? If Rabbi Gamliel is the Rosh Beit Din, and he's the Gadol and the Rishon who comes in the first one, the second of the pair, of the Zug, of these pairs of Edim that we've been talking about, the second is the Av Beit Din, and that is Rabbi Yehoshua. And he is a leading figure and sort of the protagonist and diametric opposite to Rabban Gamliel. There are a number of other stories within rabbinic tradition where these two people spar heads. This is sort of the first one, and we're really going to see them go at it. But Rabbi Yehoshua is a real threat to Rabban Gamliel's leadership. If he doesn't agree and if he causes things to get riled up, there's really, really going to be a problem. So let's see how this plays out. What does Rabbi Gamliel do? So we're on the last Mishnah, Mishnah Tet, Mishnah 9, and this is what happens. Shalach lo Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel sends for him. I don't know if it's exactly after this happened, a few days later. All right, and we saw this language in the first chapter where Rabbi Gamliel didn't like what Rabbi Akiva did, and he sent for him. And this is what Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yehoshua. Gozreni alecha shetavo etzli b'maklecha u'b'monotecha b'yom ha'kupurim shachal liot v'cheshbonecha. I decree upon you, I command you, that you should come to me with your walking stick, with your makel, and we have to remember that we saw this word in the first chapter and we're going to talk about it, and with your money belt, with your wallet, on Yom Kippur, according to your calculations, on the day that you think is Yom Kippur. So boom, stakes are really high here. We find out some information that we didn't know in the Mishnah before, right? And here, the whole chapter, we've been talking about sanctifying the new month, but we are in the tractate of Rosh Hashanah. And we haven't had Rosh Hashanah mentioned this entire chapter. But here at the end, it gets mentioned in a by the way. It's not even mentioned verbally. It's implied. Because this whole dispute about whether the witnesses were lying and saying the right day, what day was it on? It was on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. It was on Rosh Hashanah that there's a dispute of what day is really Rosh Hashanah. If Rabban Gamliel says, today is Rosh Hashanah, and I accept the witnesses, and then I count 10 days, I'm going to get to one day being Yom Kippur. But if Rabbi Yehoshua thinks that what they said made absolutely no sense, and that Rosh Hashanah is really a different day, when you count 10 days later, it's going to be a different day according to his calculations that's going to be Yom Kippur. And then we're going to have, if this battle holds out, right, we're going to have two different heads of the academy, or the number one and the number two, celebrating Yom Kippur on different days. Now, this is going to be a real fissure in the nation, right? Can you imagine such a thing? The holiest holy day, Yom Kippur, and you have two different groups celebrating on different days, and we can't even agree which day is Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Gamliel sees this as a real looming threat to his authority if Rabbi Yehoshua would not accept the day he sanctified as the new moon. And so he wants Rabbi Yehoshua to do a public show, right? We've been talking a lot about the actions that people need to do that need to be seen, right? He wants him to do a public action that presumably other people will see. The day that Rabbi Yehoshua thinks is the true Yom Kippur, the real Yom Kippur, according to Wei Shamayim, thinks that the new moon should be, that the divine thinks the new moon should be, he should do actions that are completely mundane, not holy. Come to me and show that you aren't celebrating Yom Kippur on this day. Bring your money belt and your walking stick and show up and come to me on the day you think is Yom Kippur. Okay, this is a big ask, a really big ask. Think about it. You 100% believe that this day is going to be Yom Kippur, and you are being asked to break it, to break your Yom Kippur, to show that you're bowing to the authority of Rabban Gamliel, who you think made a terrible decision. Up until now, we've only heard the voice of Rabban Gamliel. We don't hear Rabbi Yeshua from the moment he said, it doesn't look that bad to me. I don't agree with what you did. We didn't hear his voice. We can only imagine what he's feeling. And now we find out. It says, Halach umatza'o Rabbi Akiva mitza'er. Rabbi Akiva goes to seek him out, goes to find Rabbi Yeshua, and he finds that he is in pain, that he is upset, understandably so, right? Maybe Rabbi Akiva went to seek him out because he knows what it's like to be reprimanded by Rabban Gamliel, and he thinks maybe he can commiserate. I don't know. He seems to be trying to be the go-between. He wants to rectify the situation. He does not want there to be two disparate Yom Kippurim, and he actually is going to try to convince Rabbi Yeshua to accept the word of Rabban Gamliel and do what Rabban Gamliel wants. And he says to him, right, he says to Rabbi Yeshua, Yesh li lilmod, shekol ma sha'asa Rabban Gamliel asui. I have a way to learn this. He's going to interpret a pasuk, a verse. I have a way to learn that everything that Rabban Gamliel did is done, i.e. is the correct way to do it, is acceptable, is what the divine wants. And then he quotes a pasuk that we're familiar with because it ended, we're ending the second chapter, and this pasuk ends the first chapter. We're going to read it here in the context, and then in our summary, we're going to go back and compare the two. Right? What's his verse? He says, Elo Moedei Hashem, Mikre Kodesh, Asher Tikru Otam, Moedam, right? These are the fixed holidays of the divine, right? They are holy days, those which you call them. Right? And then the drasha, the interpretation that he gives is ben bizmanan, ben shelo bizmanan, ein li moedot ela elu. Whether they were done in the correct time or they were done in the incorrect time, these are the only, I only have these holidays, right? His drasha is that the verse says, which days are holy days? The days which you call, you, the people, call holy. And then in the drasha is, it doesn't matter if you made a mistake or you did it correctly. Whatever you call holy is holy, right? So Rabbi Akiva's trying to give him an out to say, it's true, I agree with you, Rabban Gamliel made a mistake. It's not the correct day, but it doesn't matter if it's the correct day or not, because the Torah says that if the court sanctified it, then it becomes a holy day. So you don't need to try to justify, you know, or to say, uh-oh, but in nature, it isn't really the holy time. There's no objective truth about what's right. It's only what the court says. And there's an interesting play here because we've had the phrase earlier on. We had the phrase in Mishnah Vav. We had the phrase ben bizmanan, ben shelo bizmanan, right? And there that phrase meant in its time, which was either the night of the 30th or the night of the 31st, right? And then we had this bechloket. Do we have to actively sanctify them or not? Or does the divine sanctify them if it's on the night of the 31st, right? And here, ben bizmanan and ben shelo bizmanan isn't that. It isn't. Right? Because both of those days, the night of the 30th or the night of the 31st, are really the true objective nature days that Rosh Chodesh can be. But here the read is whether it's in the right time, i.e. in what nature defined could be, or it's in the completely wrong, mistaken time that is not what nature thinks it could be. So we have like a play where we use the same language we used earlier, but the meaning is switched and is jarring. Right? And that's what the drasha that Rabbi Akiva says to him to try to explain why it's okay to accept Rabban Gamliel's authority. But then interestingly, we don't hear Rabbi Yeshua respond to him, but we see what Rabbi Yeshua does. Balo etzel Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus. Rabbi Yeshua goes to Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus. Now remember, Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus is the first one who said, these guys are false witnesses. And then Rabbi Yeshua says, yeah, what you say makes sense. So he goes to him, possibly to check out what he's doing. Like, is he you know, is he going to accept Rav Gamliel's authority? Is he not? And then this is what Rabbi Dosa says to him. Amar lo. Im ba'im anu ladum achar beitino shel Rav Gamliel. Tzrichim anu ladum achar kol beitin ubeitin. If we're going to come, right? And by the way, we've had the imagery of coming and sending, right? If we're going to come and we're going to judge. So now remember, in the first chapter, we had judging. The world was judged on 4 days. Right, and it was God doing judging. Obviously, we've had the whole time the phrase Beit Din, which I keep translating as court, but it's called the House of Judgment. But so far, the court hasn't really judged anything. I mean, they've tried to livdok, and they had to check. They didn't judge if the witnesses were telling the truth. And they sanctified things, but they haven't judged anything exactly yet. Or maybe Rabbi Gamliel judged whether the witnesses were telling truth, but we haven't had that word. And ironically, now the judging is not happening through the court. It's the people have to come and judge the court whether their behavior is correct. If we're going to come and judge after the court of Rabbi Gamliel, then we'll have to go and judge after every single court throughout Jewish history, right? You're worried that Rabbi Gamliel made a mistake? You're worried that he's abused his authority a little bit? Well, what, you think that hasn't happened in human history before? And then he says, so what does it mean, every single court? We're going to have to go back. Sh'amad mi'amor Moshe. We're going to have to go all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, our first leader in rabbinic authority, and check everything. Ad Achshav, from there until now. Okay, that's like all of Jewish history. Who's to say that no mistakes hadn't ever happened? And then he gives a drasha to explain why we don't really need to do that, why it's going to be okay. Shene Amar. Vayal Moshe v'Aron Nadav v'Avihu v'Shivim Mizikney Yisrael. The verse, and this is a verse that's happening at Har Sinai, that Moshe went up and Aaron went up and Nadav v'Avihu, Aaron's kids go up, and then the 70 of the elders of Israel, right? And remember, the high court is a court of 71, and the court is like Moshe plus the 70. And then Rabbi Dosa gives his drasha. He says, V'lama lo nit parshu shmotam shel zakenim. And why doesn't the text make explicit, why doesn't it explain the names of the 70 elders? Like everyone else had their name mentioned, and then it says this like a big amorphous group of 70 elders, right? Why aren't their names mentioned? Ela lilmod, this comes to teach us, shekol shlosha u'shlosha shamdu beitin al Yisrael, harehu kebeitino shel Moshe, right? Why is it that they're like an amorphous being? It comes to teach us that every three, and three is the smallest unit of a Jewish court, of a beitin al Yisrael, a beitin that is upon or that serves the Jewish people. That beitin is like the beitin of Moshe, right? Because it's not about the specifics of the person. It's about the specifics of the institution. There's something similar that about the power of the institution that goes beyond the specifics of the people who make it up. And I think that's what he's saying. Like, if you want to try to undermine Rabbi Gamliel, you don't like Rabbi Gamliel's behavior. But if you're doing that, you're really undermining the authority of the court. And our whole rabbinic system, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, going back to the revelation of Torah in this world, is predicated on human partnership, human involvement, and the human revelation of Torah, right? All those takanot, all those decrees that we saw in the first chapter and at the beginning of our chapter relied on the authority of the court to judge the situation and to see what the best behavior was and to make a decision and to act. What, now you're going to have to go back and we're going to have to be in doubt of all the tradition we got until now? That will really be destabilizing. I think that's what he's saying. So he's trying to say, like, it's not about Rav Gamliel himself. It's about the entity of the court. That's the end of his drasha. And then the next phase that we see is we're going to see that Rabbi Yeshua is going to pick up his staff and go to Rabbi Gamliel on the day he thinks it's Yom Kippur. Now, the question that I have about this Mishnah, is it that he's convinced by this drasha? Does he think this is the drasha and this made me understand and I'm okay now? Or is it that he sees that like his one ally in this battle is no longer with him, right? That Rabbi Dosa is going in Rabbi Gamliel's camp. I don't know which it is. The Mishnah doesn't tell us. Right? Because he doesn't speak. We just see his actions the whole way through to know how he feels. And maybe it's some combination of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Dosa, right? Which is both, right? Rabbi Akiva's claim is the divine knows that human beings are going to make mistakes and the divine said, this is how I want it. And it sounds like Rabbi Dosa's claim is the Torah understood the institution of the court is greater than the people. And there might be mistakes along the way, but the value of the institution is what establishes precedent of rabbinic Judaism in our lives, or Torah in our lives. And you don't want to undermine that. What does Rabbi Yeshua do? Natal maklo umaotav biyado. He takes his staff and his money belt in his hand. V'halach liYavna etzel Rabbi Gamliel. And he goes to Yavna, where Rabbi Gamliel is, b'yom shachal yom ha-kippurim liyot b'chashbano, on the day that he thinks is Yom Kippur. I mean, this must have been, I'm just imagining him going, it sounds so painful. Okay, and then when he gets there, amad Rabbi Gamliel v'nashko al rosho, amar lo, bo b'shalom Rabbi v'talmidi, Rabbi b'chachma v'talmidi shikibalta et divrei. Rabbi Gamliel gets up and he kisses his head. I had not noticed this now. I have to put it on my list. That's the use of the word Rosh as an actual head. Now I have 6 uses of the word Rosh. I'm open to people writing to me about thinking about what all these Roshes mean, right? We have the Rosh Ahar, we have the Rosh Dvarim, we have the Rosh Beitim, we have Rishona, we have Rishon, and now we have Rosh as in head. It's clear to me something about this chapter is what the Rosh Beitin is supposed to be about. What is the head of the court supposed to be about? I'm going to be talking about that in a second. And there's clearly some conversation going on. I don't know if it means that you need to remember to be the Rishonah or the Rishon, but understand that there's stuff coming after you versus the Rosh Devarim and the Rosh Ahar that is the top or the pinnacle and the main, and there isn't something else. I don't know. Anyone have a good idea? Send me it. So he kisses his head and he says, come in shalom, in peace, my teacher. Rabbi Gamliel calls Rabbi Yeshua his Rebbe and my student. And Rabbi Gamliel calls him both his teacher and student. And then he explains, you're my teacher in chokhmah. And I want to remind you that we had this word chokhmah. The chokhmah was what was the midwife was called, right? That's another idea that I want help with. If people want to write to me to think of what the links are between the midwife who births, the moon being pregnant, and then the imagery of the moon being like the pregnant woman. And then here at the end, him calling Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi in Chochmah. I don't know if it's like the midwife who like is an expert in her field and through her active actions of bringing life to this world has learned something more. Or is it just that we can talk about in a second what wisdom I think that he thinks he has, or it is translated as wisdom. And you are my student because you accepted my word. And that's where the chapter ends. So now we only have a few minutes. So we need to unpack it. We need to unpack what's going on here. So first of all, I want to remind you, like, there's an interesting parallel between the ending of the chapter and the beginning of the chapter, right? The beginning of the chapter had threats to the authority of the court that came from outside. And now we're ending with threats to the authority of the court. But it's actually sounds like it's much more dangerous because these threats to the authority come from the inside, right? Rabbi Gamliel is afraid and he needs to squash the threat. In the beginning, they just sort of avoided the threat. They made a fix to like do a workaround around the threat, but they didn't need to squash the threat. Here, the threat has to be squashed because if it's not, there's going to be a breakaway, a fissure in the nation. The other interesting things, in the first few Mishnah, we have the idea of Mishlochim and Mekablim, and here we have Shalach lo Kabel, Kibel et Varai. We have the same words. But what's interesting is, in the first Mishnayot, my problem was I didn't want to accept people's testimony because that was what the threat was. Oh, I guess it's the same thing. And here too, they don't want to accept Rabbi Gamliel, and that is the threat. So I have a similar thing of where the threat is coming from. Although I guess in the first chapter, the not accepting protects you from the threat. I only accept now from people I know. Whereas here, we need to make sure he accepts if we want to be protected from the threat. We need him to accept Rabbi Gamliel's authority. So that's interesting, this sort of dynamic between the beginning, this idea of, I know that I need a centralized authority and I need to protect the authority of the court, but how am I going to go about doing it? The second interesting thing is, right, if we compare our Mishnah to the end of the first chapter, right? And I already showed you that there's a number of parallels in the language. He comes to him with his staff and his money belt and the verse. That is the link, right? We have the verse in both places. Even in our Mishnah here, we see parallel. At the beginning, there is he sent for him and there's the staff and the money belt. And then he goes and he finds him sad. And then there's Moshe that stands up. And then we have the idea of Am Yisrael, right? We have Amad Moshe, we have Amdu'al Beit Yisrael, and then in the end, Rabban Gamliel stands up before him. So we have even here some flow in this Mishnah of words that repeat, right? The word halach is repeats, he's halach and finds him sad, halach liyavna. But how do I look at this Mishnah compared to the Mishnah before? So here there's a number of interesting things, right? In the Mishnah before, we were learning that the Edim could break Shabbat, right? Because they had this higher mission that they had to come and do, bring the testimony, right? So when they took their sticks and when they took their food and things like that, they don't feel tension. They know that they're justified, that they're bringing Kedushah, and this is like a very, very important moment. Right here, when he's bringing his stick and his money belt, it's to undermine the Kedushah that he believes, right? So in some ways, they're both breaking Shabbat, right? The Edim are breaking Shabbat and he's breaking his Yom Kippur. The experience that they feel while doing it is diametrically opposed, right? I assume the Edim feel that they're involved in this powerful ritual that is really bringing holiness to the world and that the divine wants them to do. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua feels that he's desecrating something and that the motivator for him is not the divine, but is another human being, right? There's definitely this juxtaposition between the divine and Rabban Gamliel going on here, right? And you see that with the use of the pasuk. In the end of the first chapter, we use this verse, Elamodei Hashem, Asher Tikru Otam B'Bo Adam, to say, the divine wants you to do it exactly in the right time. So if the divine made Rosh Chodesh fall on Shabbat, then the divine wants you to break Shabbat because you must do Rosh Chodesh at the right time. And this drasha is using the same verse to actually say, in some ways, the exact opposite. We know you're not doing it at the right time. You made a mistake. But that's okay. You can still create holiness that way, even though it isn't in the right time. But the fact that you called it is. And so it's an interesting play on the use of the pasuk. One is sort of a fulfillment of the divine's desire. I mean, I guess they're both a fulfillment of the divine's desire, but it's one is where the human beings are trying to fulfill the divine's desire as the divine wants it. And the second one is saying that the divine acknowledges that sometimes human beings are going to make mistakes and that's going to be okay for the divine, which I guess is a really, really important message as well. But you sort of see that the juxtaposition between a human being serving his creator or her creator versus what is sort of being forced upon Rabbi Yeshua to serve Rabban Gamliel is not looking so great. And I think that might be part of the message of this whole chapter. And that is, what is the function of the Beit Din? What is the function of the court? And what is the function of the head of the court? And I think that what was important is that Rabban Gamliel really needs to learn a lesson throughout this entire chapter. Both chapters, I actually would say, this theme carries through. There has been a lesson being taught that the divine really wants to be in partnership with human beings, and that the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh plays out in the importance of activating every person in Israel. Every male person, we'll say that always is a subset, right? We want all the different people to come as Edim. Even we want the we want the nation to be Makadosh. We want the information to go out, even to the diaspora. We want everyone to feel active and involved. We're going to give them su'udot. We're going to give them festive meals. We're going to incentivize them to coming. And even when you live far away, we're going to try to make you feel connected. And we're going to have you looking at the sky, or we're going to have you looking for the torches. And we're all part of one big whole because we can only function together as a whole. And that has been the message. And it seems like Rabban Gamliel forgot that idea. And so maybe the concept of the chachma that Rabbi Yeshua knew, right? What did Rabban Gamliel do? He said, it doesn't really matter what the Edim say. Even if they say shtiyot, something silly. I know how to do Kiddush HaChodesh. I have the calculations and I'm the authority and I'm just going to do it. And it doesn't really matter what they say. Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus and Rabbi Yeshua, both of them said, no, the acts of the Edim are so important. Being connected and hearing what they say is what the essence of Kiddush HaChodesh is about. And I think here too, there's a message about leadership, right? Rabban Gamliel can't just force things on people, because if you force things on people, they're not going to be with you. You need to be able to listen to what the Na'am is saying if you want unity. right? And possibly, maybe he learns this at the end, right? I'm a little suspicious because I know another story about him, Masechet Brachot, where it doesn't seem like he learned this message. But I think that part of what's being put here is trying to say that the Nasi, who's the Rosh, is a Rosh to a rest of a body, right? Is a head to the rest of a body. And the rest of that body is, first of all, the other Rabbanim that he has to work with. And the rest of that body is all of Am Yisrael. And that they have to work together in tandem if we're going to have a unity of calendar, a unity of practice, and if we want to create Kedusha in this world. So we do need a centralized authority, and that's extremely important. The Beit Din and uniformity is extremely important. But if it's going to function in a healthy and function way, the Beit Din, how it has to run, needs to learn from the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh about having everyone be active participants. Okay, next time we'll start the second half of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and we'll really delve into the holiday itself.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.